Oh, plant friend, it's your girl Maria here. I'm hopping in before the start of the episode to ask you, have you taken the Bloom and Grow Radio 2020 listener survey yet? 2 years ago, I sent out a survey. 1,000 people in our community filled it out, and it was so helpful for me to get to know you guys better, what you're struggling with, how I can best create content to help you, cheer you on after learning what you're nailing in your plant life these days. But I've re-released a new version of that survey that I would love every person in our community to fill out. In the survey, I get to find out more about you, where you live, what type of plants you have, how I could best serve you with podcasts and videos, and I clue you in about a seed of an idea that has been germinating in my brain, and I ask your feedback before I move forward, continuing to nourish it and hope that it grows. So if you could take a minute, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you probably 5 minutes to complete. My goal is for 3,000 of our listeners to complete the survey, and I know you guys are going to blow past that number. All right, here's the show. Doom, doo, 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 doo. Welcome to episode 101 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. Oh my gosh, here we are, triple digits, episode 101. I will shut up about the numbers of our podcast moving forward, but I just wanted to say thank you to all of you who joined me on Instagram for the epic celebration that we had last week. If you're interested in catching those Instagram lives that I did with Leslie Halleck, Chris Satch of Botanic Tonic, Cola from Black in the Garden podcast, Summer Rain Oaks from Homestead Brooklyn, and Alessia from Apartment Botanist, you can check out my IGTV. So those IG lives went directly to my IGTV. We had some really interesting conversations about specific topics. And the giveaway, the epic 100th episode giveaway, is running through this Friday. So if you want to throw your hat in the ring for over $800 worth of amazing prizes from a lot of Bloom and Grow Radio sponsors and friends, go to my Instagram and check that giveaway out because it is epic. Also, the giveaway is rooted in community, and everybody who enters has to give a compliment to one of their plant friends on Instagram, and we really just want to break the internet with planty kindness. Like, that's really my goal with this giveaway. So head over to Instagram, Bloom and Grow Radio, and check that out. And because of the 100th episode, we've had quite a few Patreon plant friends roll in, a lot of new faces. So thank you so much to our newest Patreon plant friends: Michelle Bruno, Bonnie Spaulding, Stephanie Tolan, Emily Pandis, and Kellers C. Thank you, plant friends, for joining this community of listeners who support Bloom and Grow Radio. If anyone in our community might be interested in supporting Bloom and Grow monetarily on a monthly basis, you can check the link in the show notes. And if you can't monetarily support the show, just share an episode with a friend, throw it on your Instagram, write a review on iTunes. Just, there are a lot of free ways you can continue supporting the show as well. Speaking of the show, I'm so excited to dive in today's episode. It is always such a pleasure to have my plant friend IRL, Danae from Folia Collective, back on the show. Danae has been a beloved guest of Bloom and Grow Radio and a repeat guest since her episode titled How to Start a Plant Shop. It's one of the highest downloaded episodes of our entire 100 episode catalog. I'm sure you know her brand Folia Collective, which is a gorgeous and definitely famous in the plant community plant shop. Actually, it's now shops that are in Los Angeles. And Danae has created the most epic planty brand with the most wonderful morals and mission. And her shops are just filled with the most gorgeous, varied plants and beautiful plant accessories that she's now selling online. Folia Collective in LA was also the first live taping of Bloom and Grow Radio, and it was amazing, hosted by Folia Collective. You can check that episode out. It's all about plant community, how to cultivate plant community. But also, speaking of Folia Collective, during the pandemic, I ordered the sexiest watering can from their online store. It's silver. It's kind of like a chromey silver, and it has this really skinny spout, and it gets under all my foliage, and I'm obsessed with it. So Danae has had this unbelievable eye for design and style for so long. I've always been envious of it. So it makes complete sense that she was tapped to write her new book, which just came out, House Plants for All: How to Fill Any Room with Happy Plants. It's a really unique book because, as we dive into in the interview, she has this really unique point of view, and she's kind of perfectly suited to talk about plant care and plant styling. And we're so lucky that she decided to join me for a conversation on plant styling, because I am not so gifted with an eye for design. Design does not come to me naturally. And this conversation was super informative, and it left me with a lot of really good ideas for our new home, wherever, whenever we find it. That's enough intro, plant friends, because this episode is chock full of amazing tips and tricks for you. So let's get to it. Thank you, Territorial Seed Company, for sponsoring today's episode. Territorial Seed Company is a family-owned and operated business that's been offering both tried, tested, and successfully harvested seeds and plants to our plant community for over 40 years. Plant friends, if you want to grow high-quality organic plants from seeds, you've got to try Territorial Seed Company. They have over 2,000 varieties of vegetables, fruits, herbs, and flowers to choose from. And I know that spring gets all the hype to grow all your food outdoors. But plant friends, fall is an amazing time to grow and harvest delicious vegetables and even start plants to overwinter and harvest next spring. And Territorial Seed Company is the place to do it because they have the only fall-winter seed catalog that specializes in a selection of vegetable and herb seeds that are the perfect fit to start in the summer or early fall to harvest late fall, winter, or even overwinter. And if you want some inspiration for what to grow, like brassicas, root crops, lettuce, greens, onions, and my favorite, garlic, you can stay tuned till the end of the episode of every episode that Territorial Seed Company sponsors for the Territorial Seed Fast Fall Gardening Fact. If you're wondering about quality, they have a 75-acre certified organic and biodynamic research farm where they assess their seeds and plants for robustness, taste, and nutrition, and they actually produce 25% of the seeds on their farm, and they grow and test any seed that isn't grown directly. So if they're selling it to us, they've tried it ahead of time. All of their extensive growing information and products, as well as online garden planner, how-to videos, links to their active social media, and more are available on their website at territorialseed.com. And they're offering listeners 20% off with the code BLOOM20 at checkout. So head to territorialseed.com and use the code BLOOM20 at checkout for 20% off. All right, plant friends, here's our plant friend, Danae. Danae, welcome back, number 3, for your 3rd appearance on Bloom and Grow Radio.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. Always a joy to be with you.
We were just off the record. I was just musing on having you on episode 24 of the podcast, what feels like an eternity ago.
Right? So long.
Well, we've been so lucky to have you on for that episode on how to start a plant shop, one of the most popular episodes to date. Then we had you back on for the live taping at Folia Collective on how to cultivate plant community. And now we have you on to talk about your first book debut. I'm so excited for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a fun time.
So before we dive into all things about your book, for those who might be hearing your voice for the first time, do you want to give us a little roundup of how you became the epic plant lady behind Folia Collective that you are today?
Sure. Yeah. So I started Folia Collective in 2016. It's a plant boutique in Los Angeles, California. And really my desire to do that just came from seeing so many of my friends struggling to keep their plants alive and really becoming so defeated every time they killed a plant. And the more that I thought about it and listened to their stories, the more I realized that it felt like people just weren't getting the right information when they were buying their plants. And because they didn't know what to do with them or where to put them or how to take care of them, they were killing them and then convincing themselves that they were not good at plants or that they didn't have a green thumb. And
classic.
I knew that was a myth. So started this tiny plant shop as a pop-up originally, helping connect people with plants and the know-how to keep them happy. And over time, it's just evolved into, we're now in our second iteration of our brick and mortar location. And yeah, just getting to fill people's homes with plants.
That's amazing. And you're so perfectly, as this book comes out about plants and styling, you're so perfectly suited for it because you actually have a background in design and styling as well, right?
Yeah. So for a number of years, I worked mainly with Justina Blakeney from Jungalow as a kind of a jack of all trades when I worked with her, but I did a lot of prop styling for photo shoots as well as photography. My background is in photography. And yeah, just really spent a lot of time setting up a lot of rooms, styling rooms both for real life and for photo shoots. And because plants are such a big part of the Jungalow brand, I, you know, spent a lot of my time working with plants there and finding new ways to display them and feature them and add them to all different kinds of styling setups. And yeah, so design's just something I've always really loved. I was definitely that kid that was like constantly rearranging the furniture in her room, trying to find a new way to make everything look fresh. And I never really thought of going into it as a career, mostly because I'm terrible at drawing. And I thought you had to be able to draw to be an interior designer.
Oh, interesting.
Which, I mean, you kind of do if you want to be an actual interior designer and not just like a interior stylist. But yeah, so that was something I just kind of had been doing personally for a long time. And then when I started working in that field, really realized how much I loved it and had some confirmation that I had an eye for it. And now that I have Folia, one of the services we offer is we will go into people's homes and offer what we call plant-focused interior styling services. So we will go in and do a whole consult, help them figure out the best placement for plants that's a balance of the plant's needs, but also the aesthetics of the space and what our clients are trying to achieve. And that's really rewarding for me to see spaces transformed through plants. But to see it done in a way that really keeps the plant's needs foremost so that people aren't sticking a plant in a dark corner and then getting depressed when it dies a couple months later.
Yeah, I think you hit on something so important because I feel like there's almost two worlds sometimes. There's like the magazines that we get that have these beautifully styled homes, but like a fiddly fig is in the dark corner because it looks best in the dark corner for the photo. But like any person that knows fiddly fig care would know that like that fiddly fig would drop all of its leaves in a minute in real life. Exactly. And then like also us plant parents that maybe really want to take care of plants and we know that we have to stick the fiddle leaf by the window, but we don't necessarily know how to make it look nice. We just know that we have to like put plant care above style, above anything else. So you have kind of the best of both worlds, which is really interesting, the design aesthetic eye, but also the knowledge of what plants need to survive and wherever you're putting them.
Yeah, and that's definitely a balance, and it's not always easy to achieve. So I think it's helpful to have people that you can go to say like, okay, I have all of these plants, but I don't know where to put them, or I have this dark corner and I want a plant, but I don't know what kind of plant to put there. Because I don't think it's not always super intuitive. There's an element to any kind of, you know, to decorating and styling that's very much, yeah, an intuition. And we're all going to have that in kind of different levels, just like with other skills and talents and intuitions. And so that was partly why this book that I have coming out was really a big goal for me, because I tried to really blend those two considerations. So it's not just about how to make a room look pretty with plants, but it's also not just about how to care for the plants, trying to marry those two concepts and empower people to create spaces that look and feel good, but also where they know their plants will thrive.
I love that. And I think that it's really needed. I don't think there are many plant styling and care books out there. And I'm so excited to get my hands on your book.
Thank you.
I do have to say, Folia Collective, I've been to your, well, would you call it your second location, I guess?
Yeah.
I've actually been both. I was at your
You've
first
location. You've been to all of our locations.
Right. I've been to all of your locations. And I do have to say, your eye for design, Folia, is so beautifully designed and you have such lovely taste. And
Thank you.
You can definitely see that translated in your book. So let's talk about your personal plant design style before we kind of walk through some different profiles of different types of design. So what would you categorize kind of your approach to plant styling in your home and in your shop?
I have a hard time putting my finger on what my style should be called, but I definitely, I'd say it's a balanced approach. So it's not the like fully maxed out plants on every surface take on designing with plants, but it's also not a super minimal, like just one plant having its like shining moment. I really try to, I think, keep the needs of the plants and then the way the space feels in balance with each other. My own like personal aesthetic definitely comes into play. And of course, I think for all of us, our design aesthetics evolve over time. And that's certainly been the case for mine. I'd say it's influenced by some of the bohemian styles, although I'd say kind of in the more earthy way of doing the bohemian thing. So it's not a lot of color. It's sort of unifying colors and really letting the plants be the star. Even in my own home, I have very little art. I have mostly plants. And kind of the same in the shop. The plants really, we like to let the plants shine. So, but there is still kind of a little more of that casual, organic feel, I think, as opposed to like a more formal or super modern. Things are like rigid, soft and textured. And yeah, there's not a lot of hard corners and shiny things. I think one of the biggest influences on my own design tastes in general have been a lot of the design that's come out of Australia for the last like probably two decades.
Yeah.
Australia has been kind of on just this slightly different path than it feels like most of the world has been when it comes to design. Their designs are very warm and inviting, very loose and organic, and even just like a lot of earth tones with the occasional pop of a color, like a jewel tone or something. But that's always really spoken to me. I think it combines my love of natural things. Of, you know, I'm the kid who collected rocks, displayed rocks on my bookshelves and picked up pine cones and had those like in a bowl as the decorative element. And so I think there's something about that vibe that just really speaks to my love for nature. And I like to see that reflected in the space, but in a slightly more elevated way, where there are moments that feel a little more fancy and special. For instance, in our shop, we have mostly white things and light woods, but we have a rattan couch that has like a really rich kind of rust colored velvet upholstery. And so it's just like a little moment of... Yes, our famous couch.
I love a statement couch. Oh, I love a statement couch so much.
Me too. That couch is much prettier than the couch in my own house. So
We have Billy's like very old couch, and I keep being like, I can't wait till we get our next home so I can just get like an emerald green velvet couch. Yes. And he's like over my dead body. It's a process. It's a process.
You'll need to have your own. You can both have your own separate living rooms.
Exactly. Exactly. Just sell a couple more sponsorships for Bloom and Grow.
Right.
Two living room house. But I think it's interesting that you said that your design concept can grow, because I definitely feel like in my experience, like when I was first collecting plants, I was just so obsessed with collecting the plants. Like I could not be concerned with like creating a design aesthetic. I was just like, oh my God, how can I get as many plants on my windowsills as possible? And I had like such a weird hodgepodge of like pots and like, I don't know, I didn't know what I was doing. And then as I started realizing, wow, these plants are getting really cluttered. Like I need to kind of figure out how to put these in a way that looks nice. And I started realizing, wow, I have a lot of plants and pots are actually really expensive. That's when I kind of decided, okay, I'm going to keep all my pots for the most part white or terracotta. And once I even made that decision for myself, it's not like a style like bohemian or this or that, but I was like, okay, this will be the basis for what I'm going to build my kind of style off of. And then once I gave myself those like guidelines, it was easier for me to kind of start pulling, okay, now we'll have like a pop of gold, or we'll have a pop of this or a pop of that, that made it easier. But it definitely, I think, took me probably 2 years to like get any idea of a concept. But I also am like the last, I mean, I have no acumen for style at all when it comes to like furniture, when it comes to living, not clothes, but like living. So right, yeah, right. It's really interesting to watch your style evolve in part out of necessity and in part out of like taste too, you know, like as you become a grown up and you don't just want to like get the posters in your dorm room, you know, and you want a little bit more of like a refined look or taste, or you live with a partner. And so now it's the melding of both of your tastes. Like it's all very right. interesting and constantly evolving.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes I think people can almost like be convinced that they need to like pick a style and stick with it. And while I'm all for kind of picking items that are evergreen that you can keep for many years, because I do think a big issue in the design world in general is just that because trends are kind of pushed at us, it can convince us that we constantly need new things and there's just so much waste involved with that. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good thing. So I do think kind of choosing pieces or choosing certain elements of your taste that are the things you're going to stick with is good. But I don't think the things that we loved in our teens and 20s are not going to be the things that we love in our 30s and 40s or our 60s or our 80s. As we change, I think our tastes change and our style changes. And so I think it's good to sort of have a flexibility with that. I definitely can even look back at photos of my own house from even just 3 or 4 years ago and realize, oh yeah, I forgot about that item that I really loved at the time, but that eventually felt like it wasn't working for me anymore. And that I, you know, sold at a yard sale or whatever.
Totally.
And it's, yeah, I think it's good just to have, to know you can have the freedom to let that evolve over time, and that there's probably things that'll always be part of your taste and your aesthetic. For me, there's things I got rid of, even like when I, things from my, probably my high school days that I had at the time that I loved that I got rid of when I was in college. And now I'm like, why did I get rid of that? I wish I still had it. Like cool pottery or things like that. But yeah, I think evolution is a big piece of design. And so being able to kind of embrace that and just find the things that are core to your style and your taste, and then let the details shift around.
I love that. And on that note, much like the Bloom and Grow plant parent personality test, you have a like kind of style interior test in your book, and also some different kind of plant styling motifs almost. So can you share a little bit about the different plant designing styles that you talk about?
Yeah. So the way we sort of organized the book was around the idea of kind of an environment profile. And so instead of, you know, some books will take an approach to like say, oh, this is how to style a bathroom, or this is how to style your living room with plants. Instead of that approach, or the like, this is what it should look like if you're really, if you're super boho or you're super minimal, we tried to break down the different kinds of rooms that may be your whole house, or it might just be one room in your house, but turn those into a profile to help kind of guide people towards the right plants for their space. And so those environments that we kind of had to narrow it down to are bright and sunny, which includes both a direct sun environment and a bright indirect light environment. And then we have shifting light, lower light, a humid environment, and an indoor-outdoor space. And I think with those parameters, it becomes a little easier to tackle like figuring out the right plants to bring in. Because we've certainly probably all brought plants into our homes and then realized, oh, I don't have what this plant needs. Whether it's people that live in a super dry climate and are trying to keep ferns and calatheas alive. Or, you know, when I first got into plants, I was living in Seattle at the time. And the plant that I was obsessed with, because this is just the plant everyone was into at the time, I think, was cacti and succulents. But I lived in gloomy Seattle where it's cold and rainy most of the year and you don't see the sun for months on end. I was so sad because all of my poor succulents were getting super leggy. And I just thought like, oh, I'm so bad at plants.
Oh my God,
it was really totally just because I picked the wrong plant. And now I regret not having kept ferns there because I can't keep ferns alive in California to save my life because it's just so dry here. But I think having a little more of a boundary around what is my space like and what plants will thrive in it, I think can really help eliminate some of those frustrations that we've probably all felt as we see plants just waste away.
Totally. So you had given me a couple of names: Wild for Plants, Pinterest Plant Moment, Boho Plant Paradise, and Minimalist Plant Appreciator. So do you want to walk us through like what those different kind of styles or like almost personality traits would kind of be like for our listeners who might associate with them?
Yeah, totally. So I was thinking through just all of the plant people that I know, and then the various spaces that I see on Instagram or all over Pinterest, and tried to kind of think about the unifying themes. And so Wild for Plants was the first one that came to mind. And this is the, I think, the person who wants all the plants, and collecting is really the biggest focus. It's just, you know, they want to have every kind of Hoya and every philodendron or every cactus, and collecting is their joy. But they're not thinking as much, and they don't care as much about how to decorate with plants. It's not as much about aesthetics. It's more about expanding their collection and the joy that just having all of those plants brings to them. So that room is going to look like plants on every available surface, every shelf, plants hanging everywhere, often lots of grow lights, because having that many plants, most of us don't have enough windows to keep that many plants happy. So a lot of grow lights to sustain the growth of those plants. And really the focus is just on keeping the plants happy as opposed to what it looks like for the humans.
Totally. I love that. I can definitely relate.
Right? I think we all have at least some area of our house that's probably like this if you're really into plants. It may not be your whole house, but I'm sure most of us have like one windowsill that's just crammed full with plants. I definitely do. Then I think kind of on the opposite extreme from that is the minimalist plant appreciator. So that's a kind of quality over quantity approach where I think this person loves plants and really finds them to be beautiful and interesting and approaches them more from kind of an artistic perspective. And so this space will probably have just a handful of plants, maybe two or three plants, but they'll be very interesting and striking plants that have unusual colors or an unusual leaf shape or just an overall, the whole plant has an unusual shape. And they'll often be in a very simple setting without a lot of clutter around to compete with the plant. The planter is usually something that's also quite beautiful and adds to the sort of sculptural effect of the plant. And plants are like living art in their homes. Then I think there's kind of a few in the middle, a few different styles in the middle. One would be what I call the boho plant paradise. And so that's where plants are a huge piece of the overall decorative vision of the house or of the space. They're incorporated into many areas. So there'll be plants in almost every room and lots of different places in a room. There's usually a mix of attention to aesthetics, but also attention to the plant's needs. So it's not just sticking plants where they look best. Mm-hmm. But there may be some plants that are in a spot that's not ideal just because it really looks good there. Mm-hmm. Usually have a lot of groupings of plants, you know, kind of the classic Instagram plant moment where there's, you know, one area where there's just a great display of a lot of plants or one window that's just totally maxed out with plants. A variety of planters, usually kind of more unusual, quirky things, vintage planters, colorful planters, things like that. So this one's, I think, kind of a mix of some of the other style vibes. And then the last is what I'm calling the Pinterest plant moment. And this is where somebody maybe has never had a plant in their life, but they see a plant on Pinterest or they see a room on Pinterest. They say, oh, I want my room to look like this room. And so they go out and they buy their fiddly fig or their big cactus or their maiden hair fern. And they, you know, kind of try to replicate what inspired them in the first place. And this is usually where aesthetics are king, but there's not usually enough attention paid to the need of the plant. And so that fiddly fig goes, like you mentioned earlier, goes into that dark corner and it looks great for a little while because the plant balances the space out nicely, or it's just like the perfect corner for something tall and large like that. But eventually the plant starts to get sad and die. And then they're like, oh, maybe I'm not good at plants. Or I think often this approach also just leads to a lot of replacements. So it'll be five fiddly figs over the course of a couple of years just to keep that looking the way they want it to look.
Yeah, I feel like that's when you start viewing a plant as like a longer lasting bouquet. Like it's going to die slower than a bouquet, which is like very sad, especially for a fiddly fig tree that can go for like $200 a pop. But
right. Yeah. And that, I think that's a big piece of that is like some of these things are, there's definitely an investment involved when you're buying a tree or something like that. So
yeah.
But I do know that is an approach. And I think that's a lot of people that I know who work in kind of the interior world. That is how they think about plants. When we work with interior designers at Folia, they've often in the past just kind of approached plants as like, they'll just go to Home Depot and round up all the stuff that they think will look good where they want to put it. But they haven't thought about, oh, what does this plant need? And then end up with clients complaining because plants are dying. And so we've loved kind of seeing that that's shifting a little bit, and interior designers are starting to think more about plants or involve, you know, people like us who help by just focusing on the plant aspect of the overall design.
Yeah, my heart was so broken. One of my friends moved into my building and he hired an interior designer who did a beautiful job with his apartment, and she put succulents like in zero light. Like my apartment only, our line on our apartment, like only has, we have southern facing windows, but only on one side of the apartment. And these succulents were like 20 feet from the window.
Oh no.
And like, I didn't have the heart, like he was so excited about them and I didn't really have the heart to be like, oh buddy, but you know, everybody has to learn in their own time. And I also want to say about your Instagram plant moment, I'm going to out myself and say when I was still a plant killer, a big story about my plant killer, like you said, when you like get a succulent and you kill it and then you think you're a plant killer, was I got 5 succulents from the local bodega down the street. And I have this habit of every wedding I go to, I take a little candle votive, and I have this collection of like little votive candle holders, like from different weddings, which is like, now that I'm throwing a wedding, I'm like, that's a horrible thing to do. Like this poor, like this bride probably like rented these votive candle holders that you're like essentially stealing. But anyway, I got these succulents and I like planted them. Obviously the votive candle holders had no drainage. I put the succulents just like right out of their pot into like just bare root soil, like into the votive candle holders. And I wanted them to go on top of my dresser. I had a north facing window and my dresser was 6 feet from my north facing window, but I put these, they looked adorable when I first planted them. And I remember I took a picture of it and I put it on my Instagram, and just the caption was "bloom where you're planted." And like, obviously those plants died like immediately. And I think I watered them by like spritzing. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing back then. This was like way before Bloom and Grow, like chapters and chapters before my old life.
Right.
But I just like, you hit that on the head where like, I thought I was doing it right. I didn't know any better. And I wanted a good Instagram shot. And it looked, the Instagram photo was great. It was a great looking photo. And then those plants were dead in a few weeks.
Right. Yes. You know, I think we all fall victim to that. And I think over time, what you learn is, and I see a lot of the plant people I know do this because I've been in their homes, and people will rearrange their whole living room to take a photo where all of their pretty plants are all grouped together, but then they move it all back because they know what the plant needs. So even over time, as we learn what the plants need, I think there's, you know, we still want to have those Instagram moments, and I think that's fine.
That's right.
I don't have time for that anymore. So like, yeah. Plants just have to be where they can look good and live, because I don't have time to rearrange every time I want to take a picture.
100%. My mom has this little small chandelier in her entry hall, which has no light. And she was like, Maria, I was thinking like, wouldn't it be cool if I got a bunch of air plants and I hung them in the chandelier? And I was like, Mom, that would be so cool, but there's no light in here and air plants need light. But we like negotiated, and I was like, okay, well, if you want to hang 10 air plants in the chandelier, why don't we get 15 and we'll rotate them every week? Like we'll have 5 in the windowsill and then we'll have 10 in the, and so we like made a whole plan. Plant friends, by this time, if you've been listening to the show, you know I love Espoma Organics. They are a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. We are knee-deep in gardening season this year, plant friends. So for any of your garden projects and or problems, Espoma Organics has the organic solution for you. From potting mixes for any type of garden, raised bed, container, or in-ground, to fertilizers, to pest control, Espoma has eco-friendly organic products to help you and your garden thrive. I've been fertilizing my houseplants all season long with the indoor liquid fertilizer, which we know I'm obsessed with. It makes fertilizing such a breeze. You literally just tip the bottle over, fill the cap with the pre-portioned liquid, and then dump it into your watering can. And if you're curious about how me and Mama Fiella are using their outdoor gardening products, you can check out the Bloom and Grow Radio YouTube channel for some how-to videos. Limey also got a really nice dose of their citrus tone this summer, and he is living his absolute best life outdoors for the summer on Fiella Farm. For those of you who might be battling pests at this point of the season, they also have an entire line of organic insect and pest control sprays that make your life a lot easier. We use them on our indoor and outdoor plants, and they have been super helpful. Plant friends, Espoma Organics, they're just good people making good planty products. So to learn more about their organic products for indoor and outdoor plants, visit Espoma.com and see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon storefront to order online directly to your door. All right, back to Danae. So what would your common plant styling mistakes be if, you know, we have some people listening at the beginning of their journey and they're Instagramming succulents that are in the dark like I was? What are some missteps that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I think one that I've touched on a little bit is the biggest one. And that's choosing plants for their aesthetic appeal alone with no thought as to whether or not you can provide for what it needs. And this, I think, this is usually just out of a lack of information. So it's not knowing enough about the plant. And if you're buying plants at places where the people working there aren't that knowledgeable, like some of the big box stores might have fine plants, but usually the people there don't know enough information to really help empower you to know how to keep it happy. And so, you know, yeah, you pick up that, or even I think about, at least out here, Trader Joe's often has really great plants here.
Amazing plants.
Right? But then there isn't like a plant person at Trader Joe's. I mean, there might be an employee who knows something about plants, but it's not like they have a department.
Yeah.
And so constantly people are sending me photos of a plant they bought at Trader Joe's. And now I can tell like immediately from like the planter it's in, like, oh, is this a Trader Joe's plant? People send a picture of a plant they bought at Trader Joe's and say like, oh, I don't know what this plant is and I don't know what's wrong with it, but it's not doing well. And it's like, yeah, of course, like a plant you buy at the grocery store, you're not going to ever have enough information because the cards that come with those plants usually don't have anything helpful on them. Like, this plant needs light. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, bright and direct light, medium light.
Right, yeah.
Like, house plant.
Keep wet. Exactly. Yeah. Tropical plant. Like, oh.
Add ice.
Very useful information. Right. Or yeah, then there's things where they're really kind of going off the deep end in these weird marketing schemes that I think really lead people down weird paths of how to care for plants. But really just knowing what the plant is. And so some of the tips I give even in the book about that is just, even if you know someone who's into plants, text them a picture of the plant before you buy it and say, hey, what do you know about this plant? Or do a quick little internet search. Usually the tag that's on a plant will at least have some kind of a name, you know, even if it's just a weird common name. Or there's apps now where you can take a picture of a plant and sometimes get an accurate ID of the plant. But just try to get a little bit of information before you buy it. Or even better yet, make the plan before you choose the plants. So spend some time at home looking at the light in the room you want to put the plants in, or the room, every room of the house, and figuring out, okay, I have one room that gets great light. I have one room that has kind of medium light, and I have other rooms that get no light. And then kind of making a plan ahead of time. Get on Pinterest or Instagram and try to find spaces that look like that. But really, I think approaching styling with plants from the perspective of what does the plant need? Style with the plants in mind, I think, is really going to give you the best long-term results. And it's what's going to really grow your confidence as a plant person. So that would be, I think, my biggest one. Some of the other mistakes or missteps, I would say, are things like going a little too quickly, all in a little too quickly.
Yeah.
Plants have that kind of addictive effect on us sometimes, where you get one plant and it's like, oh, this looks great in here and I love caring for it and it's so cute and all of those things. And then you're like, now I want 50 plants.
Yep.
And you go from two sad succulents to 50 plants in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, right, I have to water these and I don't know if I have enough light for them and I don't even know what this plant is and what happens if pests come. So there's really, it can be very overwhelming once you hit that first challenge of a plant not doing well, or even just the first time you have to water all of them. You're like, oh, what? So I really think a better alternative to that, I'm all for people having lots of plants, obviously, but it's really just knowing your own, the constraints of your life, knowing what you can realistically provide. So not just about what your space can provide, but what you as a person and what your lifestyle can provide. So if you're not home very often, choose plants that aren't going to need to be watered very frequently. Choose things that are hardy and can go for a month before it needs to be watered. Or if you know your personality and you're the kind of person who wants to water something every day, choose something that's going to do well with that. I had asked my husband, Bill is really into staghorns. I've talked about that in, I think, one of our previous episodes. But the main reason he's into staghorns is because he likes to have a routine. He's very much like a disciplined person. He does like the same things at the same time every day. And he likes that he has a plant because ours live outside. He can water it every day and it's totally happy to be watered every day. He would not do well with a plant that you have to kind of pay attention to it. And sometimes it needs more water and sometimes it needs less. He likes that consistency. So I think knowing yourself well enough to know what you're likely to do with a plant will really help.
That's exactly why I did my plant parent personality test, because I feel like so much of the matching, like, it's about identifying how you approach plants and then figuring out what plants match that personality for, like, exactly what you're saying. I feel like I have this conversation with listeners all the time as well of, like, a person who travels a lot, a succulent is a great option. But if they want to water a plant every day, like your husband, Bill, like, a succulent would be a death sentence, essentially. Totally. But it's not, neither one is good or bad. It's just different. Like, everyone approaches cooking food differently and, like, everything else, making their bed differently or whatever. Like, yeah, it's so interesting and empowering to understand your kind of strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah,
when selecting plants, you know?
Yeah, totally. And realizing that there's so many different kinds of plants. And while there are things that are common to all of them in terms of needs, they have wildly different needs. And so knowing that there's freedom to choose the plants that will work best, not just for your environment, but also for your lifestyle and your personality, I think there's very freeing.
Totally.
We don't all have to have every kind of plant. You know, if one thing works well for you, if you like the easy care nature of a Sansevieria, great. Collect Sansevierias. There's 60 different species, at least at this point, of them.
Totally.
And make that work for you.
That's a fun thing too. Like, once you figure out what the right plant or care is, like, having a collector moment, like having 20 different types of Sansevieria, which we see now, or having how many different types of Peperomia are there that people could collect? Like, exactly. There's such a wide variety of all of these types of plants that it is kind of limitless. And also from a styling perspective, how fun is it to have a windowsill full of 10 different Peperomia all with, like, different leaves, or
yeah,
a bunch of different ferns, if that's your thing. I finally composted a fern that I've had for 3 years, and I just continually bring it to the brink of death. And it just finally was very clear to me that it was time to let go of this relationship, this unhealthy relationship with this fern that I've had on my end in terms of how I've abused it. So,
yeah, I think that is another important thing to remember, just as plant people in general, is that sometimes things just don't work out and it's okay to let it go.
Yes.
Oh, it's sad, yeah, when that happens. And I think we can feel kind of defeated, but you learned things from caring for and probably and maybe killing that plant. You always learn things when you kill a plant. But sometimes it's okay just to say, you know what, this just isn't working out. So even if the plant is happy enough and it just doesn't make you happy, or it doesn't look, you know, it doesn't work in the space, knowing that it's okay, give it to a friend, you know.
Totally.
Or if it's super dead, just get rid of it.
I Marie Kondo'd it. I said, thank you for the lessons. Thank you for the joy that you've brought me. And I release you. Just like Marie Kondo told me to.
You're a good KonMari student.
I don't want to keep you on for too much longer, but one other question I have for you is, for those of us with large plant collections, any styling tips for how to make a large plant collection look curated and not cluttered?
Yes, for sure. This is a big thing I talk about a lot in the book and just in life in general, because I have a lot of plants and I like them to look collected, but that can be hard to do. So some of my easiest tips, you actually mentioned this earlier when you were talking about kind of finding your own style when it came to plants, but choosing a unifying theme for your planters can make such a big difference when it comes to like a large grouping of plants. So whether it's a color or a couple of colors, terracotta, I think is an easy one because there's so many different shapes and even shades of terracotta, but they always look really lovely together. White is also a really easy one because you can find a white planter at pretty much any store anywhere.
Totally.
And again, you can get variety through the texture or the height or the shape without having things start to feel a little too crazy. And if you're really into color, then great. Choose a color you really love. It doesn't have to be like a neutral. Though I do find sometimes neutrals help in the long run because sometimes plants and pots can also compete with each other. So if all of your planters are purple, there may be some plants that like the pot kind of takes away from the beauty of the plant because the planter's a little too flashy. But I feel like it doesn't have to be neutral versus crazy. I think that if you love color, then choose a color that you love or choose three colors that you really love. If you love neutrals, great. If you like a lot of texture, then choose varying textures. But just picking one thing to kind of unify your vessels, I find makes a huge difference. Some other things you can do are think about the way that you place the plants. So instead of just like shoving stuff into a windowsill in the way that makes everything fit better, think about how they're arranged. So varying the height of things to kind of keep your eye moving. That's really kind of an essential design principle in general, is this idea of movement and flow. So varying height, varying texture, different shapes, kind of sprinkling the more unusual things throughout so that your eye keeps moving throughout the room or throughout the space that you're styling the plants in. That'll really make even a large grouping of plants feel very intentional and not just like you crammed a bunch of stuff into one corner.
Okay.
So those I'd say are two of the biggest ones. Some other smaller tricks are things like trays. So if you want to have a lot of small plants, which especially for people that are collectors, usually you have a lot of small plants because large versions of these plants cost a lot of money. But also if you want to have 100 plants, most of us don't have room for 100 6-inch or 8-inch plants. So right. We're going to have like the 2-inch and the 4-inch. Using trays to kind of create those little groupings and corral them all together, I think is a great way to keep them from looking too cluttered. It also can make watering a little easier if you can kind of group things by their needs. Then you have one tray, you can just take the whole tray to the kitchen, stick everything in the sink, do some bottom watering, and then you did it all at once. So I love using trays. And then also just thinking about other ways you might be able to create some of that visual interest, even if it's not through the plants themselves. So whether it's building little risers that you can kind of put more plants on so that you can have levels of plants in one little spot, or a lot of times I'll just turn a couple of pots upside down and stick another pot on top of it so that there's height, yes, even if the planter itself doesn't have height.
That's the greatest hack ever. Yeah, there's
simple things, right? It's so easy.
When I installed my grow light bookshelves, I didn't realize like I needed to put a bunch of my plants way closer to the grow light than the like shelf. And someone suggested that I just flip some pots over and use them as lifts. And it looks so cool because the pot is naturally triangular. So like the shape that it makes, it's like an hourglass almost. And it looks so cool. It's like such an easy, cheap hack if you have like a terracotta pot lying around or something, you know?
Yeah, totally. And yeah, you can use even a super basic pot and get a really cool effect that way. And if you want to make, sometimes the really interesting looking planters can be really expensive, but I've found that combining like two sort of plain planters that just have interesting shape, combining two of them together so you have like a round one on the bottom and a square one on the top or something like that can really give that effect of like a very expensive sculptural planter without having to spend that money. 'Cause because, you know, when you have smart. A lot of plants, probably not going to want to spend $100 on every planter you own. So
totally. That was definitely my decision with terracotta was, okay, I don't have $60 to $80 a pot to shell out for 100 plants. So I better figure this out.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something I love about terracotta, especially, is that it's very accessible. You can find it almost everywhere. Pretty much every hardware store in the country is going to have some terracotta pots, probably.
Totally.
They change over time. So I think you also, I love when I find plants like estate sales that have been in the same terracotta pot for like 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. And it's got like all of that like mineral salt built up in the outside and it's kind of patinaed. And, you know, it's like the pot itself has history.
I love a good patina. Oh my yes. God. I love that. I'll say too, like the tiered plant stands. I have the same. I liked one IKEA three-tiered plant stand so much. I bought it again to put in another corner. Like, especially yep. in corners, it's just such an easy way to put a lot of plants in a corner with that kind of three-dimension different levels that you mentioned.
Yeah.
People make great products now.
Yeah, I have that same. I have two of that same IKEA.
Mm-hmm. So good. Danae, these have been amazing suggestions. I hope that people start viewing their spaces and their plants differently after listening. I know that I am. I'm so excited about your book. So tell us everything. What is the name? Where can we find it? I think it was released last week. So tell us everything.
Yeah, it's called House Plants for All, How to Fill Any Home with Happy Plants. You can find it pretty much anywhere books are sold. It's on Amazon. If you go to foliacollective.com, there's a link at the top of our site that goes directly to the book page, and you can either buy it from us, order it from any of the booksellers we've partnered with. We have a lot of plant shops around the country carrying it, so check with your local plant shop. If you order it directly through Folia, there'll be signed copies available. So if you want a signed one, I'm happy to sign one for you.
Amazing.
And yeah, I think in this post-COVID era, or I don't know if we're actually even post-COVID yet, but mm-hmm. in the era of COVID, we had a bunch of events planned and those might be all kind of falling apart. But keep an eye on the Folia Instagram if you want to find out anything about events that might be coming up. We're working on some digital events, so some ways to kind of create the community feeling that the in-person events I had hoped to do would give, but doing it virtually.
That's so cool. So should we all follow? I mean, I hope everybody is already following Folia Collective on Instagram because it's the mecca of amazing plant photos with your 100,000 plus followers that you have. Is Instagram the best way for us to follow you and make sure that we can know about those community virtual events that you're planning?
Yes, we do lots of updating on Instagram. We also have a newsletter. If you just go to foliacollective.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. We only send out newsletters when there's something interesting going on. So we promise we don't spam you. But Instagram is always a great place to find out what's going on.
Perfect. Well, Danae, thank you so much for lending us your expertise. And everybody go out and get House Plants for All. What a great title.
Thank you so much for having me. Always so fun to do this with you.
Thank you, Danae, for such an awesome conversation. She's such a dear friend, and I'm just so proud of everything that she has built. And this book looks unbelievable. You can click the link in the show notes to buy her new book, Houseplants for All. Check it out. Let me know on Instagram what styling tips and tricks you're applying to your own homes. Thank you to our Patreon plant friends for supporting the show. I love you guys so much. Thank you to all of the listeners who are routinely tuning in, listening to the show, sharing it with their friends, sharing it on their social media. I appreciate you all so darn much. I am just filled with gratitude this month for everybody and all of this celebration. And of course, thank you to our amazing episode sponsors. Espoma Organics, we know I love them. You've been hearing about them all year. For their organic, eco-friendly potting mixes, fertilizers, pest control products, check out espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to the Bloom & Grow Espoma Amazon storefront, where I have all of my favorite picks that you can order online. And now it's time for the Territorial Seed Fast Garden Fact. Fun fact, hard neck garlic will grow an edible flower-like curly Q, cute little curly Q spiral tip, and it's called a scape. So you can use the scape fresh or sauteed to add a garlicky zing to your dishes. So how you harvest is when the stalk has formed a full curly Q loop, harvest it by cutting just above the first leaf, and saute it right up. Also, removing the scape has an added benefit of redirecting the plant's energy back to producing that juicy, delicious bulb. To check out all of Territorial Seed Company's fall seeds and unbelievable garlic selection, which I am excited to dig into, visit territorialseed.com and use code BLOOM20 for 20% off. All right, plant friends, I hope you have beautifully planty weeks. I'm riding high in the season of growth. I am having so much fun walking in the woods every morning, checking out how the woods change every day. If you have the opportunity to get outside and get in these gorgeous woods, do it, plant friends. And if not, I'm also spending the mornings looking at my plants. My new thing is I look at a plant before I look at a screen every morning. I'm not allowed to look at my phone until I spend some time mesmerized by my plant's leaves. So I highly suggest you check it out. And of course, until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing.